I love that song so much. I always say that because I pick the songs.
Me too.
So of course I love them. But this song, it's like whenever I hear this in the car, oh my God, I go freaking insane. I just like start screaming it. And like butt dancing.
I know. It's a great tune. You know, my band does this song.
Oh,
and
yeah?
I go cuckoo.
Oh, I bet.
I almost pass out.
Yeah.
I go so crazy from it.
I bet. Well, you can sing. Yeah, I can't. Good. I just pretend. I pretend I can sing.
I you know, it's who cares?
Sing I'm a good lip syncer. I'm a really good lip syncer. You know what? I used to have, I haven't prepared anything for this, so this is just going to be a total free for all. I mean, I have some ideas about what we can talk about, but this is totally off the cuff. When I was 18, 19, 20, whatever, I had this friend, Mick. And his name is Mick Thompson, M-I-C. He's a dancer, and you've probably seen him. He's danced with everybody. Michael Jackson, he's been on the Academy Awards. He's just, like, done everything. And so for fun, we used to make, you know, like, lip-syncing videos, and he would choose a song. He liked all this bubblegum-type music, which I was more of a rocker, mm-hmm. but still, he chose the bubblegum music. And then I would learn the words, and then whether it was me or anybody else, and we would star in it, and we would lip sync as if we were the singers of the song. And that was just so much fun. And I was absolutely by far the best lip syncer because I could I imagined how their mouth would move when they were saying it. And other people didn't put, I used to be an actress. So I think I started studying acting after these videos, but I think that I've always been mm-hmm. something, you know, like I always noticed I was good at accents. I could do accents pretty well and I would mimic people. So I would like mimic the way they would sing the song as opposed to just saying the same words they did in a different, slightly different way. So anyway, that was just so much fun. And then he would edit them all together. And then because he was a professional dancer, he would have other professional dancers in the video. So there was always this really great choreography in it. I mean, it was something he did with videotape at his home, and you know, and it wasn't like he did it in the studio or anything, but still it was really fun. I did a number of those videos, and we would just go out in LA somewhere and we would shoot, and we would gather crowds, and it was just so much fun. Those were the days.
Oh, I love
but I can't sing for anything
like that.
We had so much fun. But, you know, I mean, I've always been creative somehow. That was just one way to be creative. And I absolutely loved it. And it was so funny because the first video I ever did with him was a video we did, Be Near Me. What's that song by?
Be Near Me.
I can't remember the name of
ABC.
ABC, thank you.
It was ABC.
Yeah. And so I wasn't like the star of that, obviously, because it was a man who was singing it, but I was like one of the girls in the video. So we all decided to get dressed up in these crazy outfits, and we went off onto some location to film it, and Mick needed some kind of, I don't know, like something for his camera. So he was wearing this hilarious like Prince Valiant dark wig, and he's a blonde, a natural blonde. So he's wearing this like black wig, and it's kind of like a bob. And some crazy outfit, and he went into Circuit City, and everyone was staring at him, and it was so funny just watching. And he's the kind of guy that like he has so much energy, and he would just move all the time, always moving, always dancing. And like I remember one time we went to Sizzler, we were at the Sizzler salad bar, and we were standing in line, and Mick was just like dancing and going kickball change, and he was just like freaking spazzing out. It was so funny. Oh my God, that was like back when I was so young.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah,
I know. And the things we did, and it's funny because at the time when I did shit like that, and I did shit exactly like that with all my friends, we weren't necessarily doing it for other people to admire it or watch it or be horrified by it. We were doing it for ourselves.
For ourselves, yeah.
Because there was something fun about just being, you know, we were being exhibitionists, of mm-hmm. course, and that there was just something fun in that. Now I've got kids. Mm-hmm. I have an almost 14-year-old son. Like, that shit's just around the corner for me to watch that and to have to just be, let him have it.
Yeah.
Let him have it. Let him be ridiculous because you did it. And my mom and dad, I mean, they, oh my God, they must have found me so obnoxious.
Well, that's what happens when you're young. Jesus. You know,
yes.
I don't know if you happened to see my, I had a revelation the other day, and I don't know if you saw, I posted about this both on Twitter and Facebook, but long time ago, I mean, I remember, I mean, I've had this like weird modesty feeling. That's mm-hmm.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. And I just kind of want to talk about that because or just like expound on it, or is that the right word? Mm-hmm, expound. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, I always had this expand. I always had this feeling like, and it would come over me occasionally. It's not something that I always experience, but, and it still does to this day, but it's this, kind of vulnerable, modest feeling. Like I don't want, the best way I can describe it is like, I'm a 6-year-old girl and a man is looking at me in a sexual way and it makes me feel uncomfortable and it makes me want to hide. And I didn't have the words to describe that back when I was in my early 20s, but I told my mother, you know, that I had that feeling. And I don't know what I said, maybe that I felt private or modest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she seemed to be under the impression that that would go away once I was a more seasoned actor. And obviously it never has. And I was actually talking to Bob about this feeling. And as I was telling him, it just kind of hit me that I believe it came from the fact that when I was a little girl, I just really didn't trust men. And it's not mm-hmm. to say that I didn't like them. I mean, I was very fortunate. I trusted my father completely. Mm-hmm. And I had men in my life who, while they were really good for and to me, they might have been the ones that I overheard maybe saying something that was inappropriate. They didn't say it to me, but I heard them say something. Or I would see, you know, like there were men in my life that I was aware that they, you know, they had a lot of playboys and I knew, and I'm not even saying that there's anything wrong with that, but just that I knew that they looked
at those. It creeped you out.
Yeah, they looked at those playboys and that it made them feel a certain way and that made me feel afraid. And mm-hmm. and the other thing was every time that I was, I had, you know, a number of babysitters here and there. Most of them were women. And there was like, for instance, there was this one woman that I would go to her house and she was a friend of the family and she watched a couple of kids. And when her husband came home, I didn't like it because even though mm-hmm. he was fine, he never did or said anything awful. It just kind of felt to me like, oh, the boss is here and everybody has mm-hmm. to watch themselves now. We can't just relax. And it's not yeah. that I ever did anything different when they weren't there. I just felt a little more uncomfortable because they were like the authority that was kind of mean. And it's not that they were mean, but you could just tell by the interaction with the husband and the wife that he was kind of the boss. And it was like, okay, no fucking around while I'm here. And so I always kind of felt like I didn't completely trust men. And mm-hmm. I actually feel that, and this is something that I didn't really go into on the thread, but I think that served me well. And for a very long time in my life, I had a boyfriend when I was 18 years old. He was my legitimate boyfriend. He wanted to be my boyfriend and we were a couple. We broke up. We were together for 9 months. We broke up. And then that was it. I didn't have a legitimate boyfriend until I was in my late 40s. And that's Bob. I dated men and I had relationships with men, but nothing that was ever a committed relationship. Sometimes it was because I didn't want one with them. Sometimes it was because they didn't want, you know, one with me. Sometimes it was distance. There was a long distance situation that just couldn't be overcome. Nobody was going to move. So it just turned out that I didn't have a relationship. And I think that if I had a little bit more trust, or if I trusted more easily, that I might have gotten involved with people that weren't so good for me. And I think that my, because it wasn't like I was sitting there looking at every guy and seeing him as an enemy. It's just that in order for me to feel comfortable with someone, especially a man that I'm going to be intimate with and show my true self, when I say trust, I don't mean trust like so much, although it is included, about, you know, like cheating, that kind of thing. It's more about mm-hmm. trusting them with who I am and not mm-hmm. criticizing me and making me feel less than or not valued. And most of the guys that I went out with displayed a little bit of that, where they would either be critical or they, you know, I mean, I literally had fucking guy I went out with told me that women over 40 lose their value. And
what?
Yeah, he was such a jerk. And but I mean, you know what? He was so, he was just someone I dated. He was not someone that I ever was in love with. But we would date off and on. I would usually break up with him, even though we weren't officially a couple. I would call it off, and then somehow, you know, I was bored, and then we would go out again. And he was just a very surface guy. But I mean, this was after.
Yeah,
we weren't dating anymore. He was at this point, he married someone. And I was selling industrial chemicals, and he had his own business, and I was trying to force him to buy my products. And so we met. I was like browbeating him into buying my products. And so we met at this coffee shop, and we were sitting there talking, and it was so funny because, and I even wrote about this once on a blog. We were sitting there in this coffee shop, and there was mostly women. And so he was sitting across from me, and he was trying to, he was saying to himself, like, you know, oh, I know you were so in love with me and you wanted to marry me. And I'm like, no, I really wasn't. I really wasn't in love with you.
And I really didn't. I wanted you to buy my product.
Yeah. But anyway, so he said that statement. He said, women over 40 lose their value. And I was just floored, and I repeated it loud enough so all the other women around could hear. And they all looked at him. And then he threw his arms up in the air and said, I'm just the messenger. I'm just, and it was like, he was such an idiot about it. But it's like,
why would you message that statement?
Because he just wanted to feel like, you know, he didn't like the fact exactly, that he wanted to feel like I was all in love with him. And at the time, I was like 37 or 38. So it was just a way to diss me.
Yeah, of course it was. That's exactly right. So he wasn't the messenger. He was a dick who wanted to diss you.
Exactly. And he was pissed because I wasn't giving in to, like, he wanted me to admit that I was never in love with this guy. He wasn't in love with me. I wasn't in love with him. There was no confusion about that. And it was just so funny. But it was like, so, you know, I mean, I've had other men. There was once a man that I dated, and this was more, you know, this was a long distance situation. He lived in a whole nother country. But I went to visit him in this other country, and I was very young. I was like 25, 26. And at the time, I was having a problem with underarm perspiration, and it was bad. So I was embarrassed, you know, I mean, I was so embarrassed. And I bought this like Arid Triple X, and I put the Arid Triple, I was using it, and it was like freaking killing my armpits. It was like so drying, and so my armpits were painful. And I made a comment to him about that, and I told him that the Arid extra dry or whatever was so uncomfortable. And he just looked at me, and he was so condescending, and he goes, why do you even wear deodorant? And I was like,
ew,
because I don't want to have pit stains,
because my armpits are sweaty.
And then, you know, I mean, he also criticized my hair and my makeup and my shoes and whatever. He criticized everything about me. And I was so, I thought, in love with him. I just took it. You know, I just took it. And on some level, I realized early on that I didn't completely trust him with myself in like way, way, way far in the back of my head. But I was so blinded by my infatuation. And so men like him and the Mr. Women Lose Their, you know, I would hear these comments and I just didn't trust them. And I honestly didn't think that I was ever going to meet any man that I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, it'd be, and Bob is the only one. Bob is the only man that I've ever met that I feel that I can trust. He's totally a feminist, and he's, sounds like your husband. He's just—he's my best friend. We have great communication. We came together when we were both older, so we, you know, had the opportunity and the benefit of some wisdom, and So it's not to say that I hate men. Obviously, I don't hate men, but
no,
you know, I think that my distrust has kind of served me well.
You know, when you read that, it really it struck a chord with me, because I have, from just a young age, had some weird things happen with men. Like from when I was, you know, little, weird shit was said with sexual undertones. I remember one time when I was, and I am not shitting you, I have a kind of a sick Rain Man-y memory about things and trivia and facts and names and stuff like that. And I don't know. I can picture things that happened very, very vividly. And I was 3.5 years old and I was in a swimming pool. I was wearing one of those orange life vests. Remember those?
Yes.
I don't even know if they still make them like that because I couldn't swim yet. Mm-hmm. And I was treading water with another boy my age and that boy's father. And it was a big, huge, a lot of families gathering at this place called Blackberry Farm in Cupertino when I was little, 3.5. And I remember the dad looking at me. I can see the look on his face. I can picture every ounce, every square millimeter on that man's face I see. And I can hear him saying to me, "My God, you're beautiful."
Ugh.
I was 3.5.
Oh my God.
And I knew it was wrong and I knew it was creepy and I was creeped out by him for the remainder of, and until he died.
Wow.
And that was one. Of course I say nothing because when stuff like that makes you feel weird in that way,
yeah,
you don't say anything because you don't want to stir the pot and you don't want to, upset anybody. At least I didn't.
Yeah.
And then several other, like at family reunions, like the husbands of my mom's third cousin at the family reunion whistling at me when I was in a bikini at the age of 5.
Oh my God.
And I'm screaming and crying and clamoring for a towel, trying to rip my aunt's towel off of her waist because they kept whistling. It was two of them. One of them was named Lou, and I don't remember the other one's name. And I flipped out. I remember hitting the deck and like crawling away because I didn't want anybody to see my body. I was 5.
Yeah.
Okay. I got followed home on my bike when we lived on campus at Stanford by a man who declared after I beat him and laid my bike down like a motocross rider, mm-hmm. hopped a chain link fence and stood on the other side, and he goes, "Damn it, you were too fast for me."
Oh my God.
And I was 8. I mean, weird things like that. Just horrible.
Yeah.
Made me become as androgynous as I could possibly be. As a little girl, didn't want to wear hoop earrings from Italy that my grandma bought me because I thought they were too sexy. You know, like I was messed up.
Yeah.
About men. I trusted my father and I, you know, when it was safe and when we were with, I could be with around other men when I was in groups or whatever, if I knew my parents were there. But otherwise, no, I didn't want to be around anybody's dad necessarily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Coaches for the softball team. It was only if I was in the presence of other people. And I think that's really, I think it's really common for little girls to be rubbed the wrong way in a theoretical sense, because it forget it if they're ever touched, that mm-hmm. that'll fuck a person up for life.
Yeah.
But it's really tough to sort of understand when adult men are objectifying you as a little girl or making you feel that way or making overt sexually charged comments in the presence of children. It's just not okay.
No, it's not.
And that's why you had distrust.
Right. You know, because, and as you were talking about that right now, I just remembered that when I was like 6 years old, I had a girlfriend and we went to Ocean City with her father. And her father, which we don't have these in California that I know of, but anyway, they were sand crabs. They're just little sand crabs. He put sand crabs in my bathing suit. He dumped them down in my bathing suit, and I was always very shy. My mom always called me a little prude because I was. I was just always so embarrassed of my body and I didn't want anybody seeing me. And so the fact that he put something down my bathing suit, I'm going to guess that it was a one piece, although it might have been a two piece. I don't really remember. But what I do remember is feeling ashamed and feeling embarrassed, and I didn't want to do anything about it. And I kind of froze. And I don't remember how things happened. The only thing that I do remember is that he did that and that those sand crabs were in my bathing suit when I took my bathing suit off at home or whenever it was. So I guess I was so completely freaked out about what he did, I didn't even try to get rid of them. You know, I just I was just embarrassed. And I was,
you'll take pain and discomfort rather than try to draw attention to the fact that you were just completely violated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and maybe he just thought it was funny. I don't know what was going through his mind. He didn't molest me or anything like that, but it was inappropriate. It was just incredibly inappropriate. And it was horrifying to me because, you know, I mean, I also had this experience in, I think it was nursery school where I was back in Maryland and it was a hot day. And so the teachers were squirting us with hoses to cool us off. And all the kids had worn their bathing suits. And I remember, and I don't know why they made us do this because I would never do this to a kid, but they made us take our bathing suits off and run into, we were in a church. They made us run into the church where our clothes were naked. And so I had to run in and there were all these boys who had already changed and they were all dressed. And
you were naked?
And I was naked and I had to run in and then I put my clothes on and I was fucking humiliated. And I remember waiting. I wanted a naked boy to run in the room so I could laugh and point. So I was waiting to do that. And there were no more boys. It was just all girls. Mm. And, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine. I don't think that would fly today. But I can't imagine making kids do that. I mean, even though you're just a kid, it doesn't matter. You don't want to be naked in front of anybody. And that's your private business.
It wouldn't happen.
It couldn't happen anymore. But I mean, I do remember specifically that happened and it made me feel embarrassed. And, you know, so I mean, there's little things here and there, little things. And then, you know, I grew up in the sex, drugs and rock and roll generation. And both of my parents were more, they weren't hippies, but they were younger and hipper. And God only knows, you know, what they did. I mean, I know they took drugs. I know they had sex. And, you know, and I was around. I wasn't necessarily around when they were doing those things, but I was there in that atmosphere with their friends, when their friends were doing drugs. And, you know, so I saw a lot of things. You know, I saw a lot of things. I saw my mother going out with men. I saw my father going out with women. And I knew they were having sex. And it wasn't something that was... I mean, it was something that when you were a kid of divorce, you would see a lot of that. You know, you would see your parents dating. And it was awful for me, especially with my mother. I hated when my mother went out with men because I knew she would have sex with him, or I thought she would have sex with him. And it was embarrassing to me. And I remember never really thinking in terms of her wanting it. I thought I just saw them as predators. You know, I mean, obviously they weren't. She was having consensual sex when she did have sex. And my father was too. You know, the women that were having sex with him, it was all consensual. And I didn't like it. You know, I lived with him briefly. And I didn't like it when he did it when I lived with him. I didn't really care when I didn't live with him, you know, because my mother was my primary caregiver. And I was very close with her. And it's kind of different with your mom. You know, it's different with your mom than it is with your dad. But I fucking hated when my mother went out with men. And I didn't trust the men that she went out with. And she didn't also make the best choices when she was younger. She wasn't looking necessarily for a boyfriend. She was just looking to go out and have fun. And, you know, and she'd date this one and she'd date that one. And, you know, sometimes they'd last for a while and sometimes they didn't. And my little brain, I just thought they were all predators. You know, and even though they weren't, but that's what I saw. So, you know, I mean, I find it's fascinating that now as, you know, the Me Too movement is happening, as feminists are finding a place on social media, I can look back on my life and I know other women are experiencing this. There have been so many instances where we've experienced sexism or misogyny or the effects of patriarchy. And it was something that we just accepted. Maybe we didn't like it. Maybe we recognized it was there to a degree, but now everybody seems to really be waking up and we're going back into past memories and going, wow, I never really even thought of it in the way that I'm thinking of it now. You know, now it's all changing, which is good. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think that we're going to really see a change, but the, you know, and I'll just double down on this like I always do. It's, we got to get more elected, progressives elected, specifically women, because those are the people who will help to write the laws and they'll be more fair and hopefully better enforced. we can get the ERA ratified into the Constitution. We need to get all these things done, because while we're never going to get rid of sexism completely, we can certainly help to clean a lot of it up. You know what I mean? We can keep it to where nobody's going to want to say anything publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And that if anything is done, that you can sue them and win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, absolutely. I mean, today's show is kind of on a more serious note, but I mean, geez, this has been a crazy year, and we've survived it.
Crazy year.
And they never, I mean, knock on wood, they haven't been able to get rid of Obamacare. They haven't been able to do a goddamn thing.
No. And if, you know, whether or not Mitch McConnell and his gullet and his turtle head decide that he's not going to allow Doug Jones to vote on the tax bill.
Oh, my God, I know.
Because you know he would have ushered Roy Moore's pedophiliac ass in there
to
have him. Yeah, right? But we've got Corker, we've got Paul, and we may have Collins. And if we get Collins and this thing doesn't pass, if we aren't allowed to wait for Jones,
yeah,
I can't even tell you. Then it would be, so first was Virginia, right? And all those other special elections. And it was like, okay, are we just lucky? Is this just like a fluke? No.
No.
Because it happened again in Alabama. And I think Alabama was even tougher. Because, you know,
yes.
Virginia went for Hillary.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with Russia's interference. But Alabama,
I know.
That's big time. And if they don't pass this tax bill, come on, that's three.
Mm-hmm.
And then just get out of the way.
I hope they don't. Because I guess Collins is the only, one that she's like on the fence. Because I guess we've got a no from Rand Paul. And then who's the other one?
Corker.
Corker, that's right.
But then, hey, what if Jeff Flake, who gave money to Doug Jones's campaign,
right,
and John McCain pull their heads out of their
asses? It would really be nice if John McCain would pull his head out of his ass.
You guys, let me ask you this, because I'm sure you and Bob know. How is it, is the process that first it goes to the Senate, then it goes back to the House, and then the Senate has to confirm again?
Bob's going to answer. He's.
I'm going to cough. I have a tickle in my throat. Forgive me.
Okay.
Okay, because you want to know why I had the tickle in my throat? Because of the way I was talking, with, I don't know, excitement about how the tax bill isn't going to pass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, they just announced that the conference committee has come up with a mutually agreed upon version of the bill between the House and the Senate.
Seriously?
So this is, Trump just announced it a little bit.
I saw that right before we started doing this podcast. So okay, talk to me like I'm a 4-year-old.
Yeah, me too.
They want to have it passed by Tuesday. They're obviously going to push this through before they seat Doug Jones, which is another, they're pulling another Merrick Garland.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they are, those cocks.
Scam-hairy.
Of course they are.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but basically this process is that if there's a House version of a piece of legislation that achieves a similar thing to a Senate version of the same legislation, where there are two separate bills that are worded differently, what happens is once they have, each chamber has passed their version of the bill, it goes to something called a conference committee, which includes members of the House and members of the Senate from both parties, although the Democrats haven't seen a goddamn thing of what's in this legislation. It was negotiated in private among the Republican members of the conference committee. So what they've done as of today is they've released a bill that merges the best things from both pieces of legislation. And let's see, I think the tuition deduction part of it has been stripped out.
Uh-huh.
So there, I'm trying to find the actual details here. Negotiators knocked out a House passed provision that would eliminate the student loan interest deduction. So the student loan interest deduction is going to remain intact, even if this.
Okay.
There's a bunch of stuff about the top tax rate for corporations, which conservatives and Trump wanted it to be 20. It's now 21%. That's the new tax rate for corporations. Let's see. What else? Trying to find the other details here. Deduction for pass-through companies will be set at 20%, as I just said. The bill would also give some relief to people in high-tax areas by allowing them to deduct up to $10,000 in state and local property or income taxes. So that's going to continue. They're going to, it looks like they aren't stripping away the state and local property tax deduction. So that's okay. Going to remain intact in the law. The repeal of the Obamacare mandate is still in the conference report version of the legislation. Democrats have been locked out of the process as Republicans have sought to finish their legislation before the end of the year. Let's see. The pass-through rate include trusts and establish an effective top tax rate of 29.6%. Lots of little details here. Provision to set corporate alternative minimum tax, which I know both of you are just really fascinated by.
Yeah, I'm riveted.
They're lowering the top individual tax rate to 37%, but they acknowledge they needed to give some ground to House negotiators. On and on and on.
So now this is, you said, came out of conference committee.
Yes. So
and
now
each, now how does, who votes? Who's vote? Like, do both
Senate has to, yeah, the House has to vote on it, and then it goes to the Senate. The Senate
but
votes,
both,
votes
but
on
they've
it.
Already agreed on it.
They've already agreed.
So they're expecting it
well,
to pass.
And then presumably they've consulted with their individual caucuses to find out if everyone's on board with this new version.
Uh-huh.
And they've all approved. So we'll see if that actually means Susan Collins is going to vote for it. We'll see if that means that Jeff Flake will vote for it. Or which one is Flake or Corker? I forget which one was going to vote against it.
Corker's a no. Corker and Paul are no's.
Okay.
Flake
are we sure?
And McCain are yeses.
Are we sure?
Well, that's
Ron,
what they said.
Are we sure Rand Paul is a no? I don't know if Rand Paul is a no. I
watched a video of him saying he couldn't in with a clear conscience say this.
I thought that
couldn't vote for it.
I thought that was regarding a spending bill, like these continuing resolutions that they keep passing in lieu of a budget.
Oh, well, then maybe you're right and I'm wrong.
I don't know. I mean, I could be
God
wrong.
Goddamn son of a bitch.
Yeah, but I mean, look, if they had seated Doug Jones, then they would have lost. It's done. If Susan Collins voted no and they had seated Doug Jones, and Corker was still a no, then that's it. Then they wouldn't be able to pass it through the Senate. But because
right,
they're not seating
right.
Doug Jones, like the assholes they are, there
right.
it's probably going to pass unless the protesters are still making a dent in the proceedings, which, as far as I can tell, they still are. I saw some video of protests and people getting arrested in one of the Senate office buildings or one of the congressional office buildings. So we'll see how that all goes. But it looks like the D-Day is going to be Tuesday.
Okay.
So there it is.
Hideous.
Well, we'll find out what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
mm-hmm.
the GOP will ruin Christmas by this thing.
I mean, ultimately, you know, the CBO still has to score this. So if the CBO comes out with a number that shows a
right.
massive budget deficit at the end of the day as a result of this thing, you know, we could lose some more votes. It's
right.
entirely possible
right,
that
right,
they could
right.
lose some votes in the House of some fiscal hawks in the House as well as in the Senate. I mean, anything can happen at this point. As we've seen over the past year, it's really difficult to predict what the hell is going to happen from minute to minute to minute.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone going into the election yesterday was saying, especially on TV, they're going, well, I think Roy Moore is going to win. Roy Moore is going to squeak it out by a couple of percentage points. And of course, we saw what happened. So we should never count our chickens before they hatch.
Yeah.
No. But the one thing we can count is that they're all a bunch of dicks, and we know that, and they're gonna try to make this happen on Tuesday. Let's see what the CBO score says, though.
Yeah.
I thank you for explaining that. That was a great little history or like a poli sci class right
yeah.
there.
I can always sing it. I can start. I'm just a barrel, just a barrel, and I'm standing in the United States.
And then I go to the White House where
you guys mm-hmm. are so funny. All right. Well, I guess we should
Worm.
Wrap up on
that's
this
what's happening.
We need.
Sorry, I
hope.
To.
I hope they. I hope they don't pass this thing.
I hope to. I hope Collins pulls her head out of her rectal cavity.
Yeah,
I really
too.
Do. We
All
need
right.
her.
Well, okay. I guess this is going to be it for for the last show of the year.
Aw, yeah.
And thank you for the $5 subscribers who are listening
Yay.
In. Thank you. And
actually, what? Real quick before we wrap up,
okay.
Patreon has reversed course and they're not doing that fee change. I just heard during the show.
Oh, good.
So Patreon subscribers, you're not going to be... Well, the way the new fee system was going to work out is that subscribers were going to absorb the credit card fees rather than creators. So in the old way, we all absorbed the credit card fees that were charged. Now it's going back to... well, then they were going to change that so that subscribers were being billed the... it's a long story.
But now it's back to creators.
Right.
It's back to us. So,
back to us.
Yeah. So it was originally... We received about 88 cents on the dollar. In the old system, the new system would have paid us 95 cents on the dollar, but now it's going back to 88 cents on the dollar. That's basically...
And we're happy to receive 88 cents.
Yes.
In, you know, yeah. All of us, I'm sure, agree.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Hells yeah.
Yeah, I just posted about
Benefit
it on
to
my...
you.
I just posted about it on my Facebook page, so that's the full explanation there.
All right, everybody.
Well,
have a happy holiday and a happy new year. And when we come back in 2018, we're going to be all fighting mad.
Fired up.
Fired up and fighting. All right. Bye, Stephanie. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.